Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Well, good morning and welcome to another fabulous edition of Spin the Rally Pod. I don't know why I always say good morning. And I don't know why I always say I don't know why I say good morning, because it could be good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are. But it is morning when we're recording. So good morning to former sporting director and man who knows everything about rallying, George Donaldson. And hello to deputy editor Luke. Good morning, boys.
Good morning. I take issue with the fact that I know everything about rallying. I don't. I just have a vast interest in it, and I'm happy to speculate from now.
Trust me, George,
with you guys now and again.
Trust me, you know everything about rallying. You know absolutely everything and a bit more.
Well,
that's right, isn't it?
Venture, I can. Yeah. I can venture an opinion on most things. Anyway.
See, if David had given me that introduction, I would have gladly taken that. You see, there's the difference. I'm still looking to make my mark.
It'll be a while yet. Trust me. So. Is it just me, or is this 3 week gap is just feeling like it's going on forever now? It's just me.
I'll
then
go with that. Okay. One. It does. No, it's not. It's absolutely. I do as well. I just can't wait to get started. For me, the year doesn't start until Safari this year, because I'm getting to go to that one.
Yeah, that's true. But it does feel really disjointed. You know, we got going with Monty, and then we had Sweden quickly, and then we had an enormous gap to Croatia, and then he got to Croatia and it was like, right, finally, here we go. Oh, we stopped again for a bit.
I have a solution for that. I have a solution for
22
that.
Rounds.
We should have put Kenya in where it should be.
Yeah, that's true.
It would have been in front of the rains, because the rains have happened in Kenya and they were devastating, I believe. Well, you know, proper rainy season, which is devastating every year, because it comes and it's you get over a 2 or 3 week period, you get 7 or 8 proper days of rain where it's just massive. I mean, massive. I have seen it once, twice. I've seen it in the 19 safaris I've done. I've seen it twice, and it's pretty amazing when it comes. And it just pulls out all the gravel roads. They all have to be re-engineered effectively.
But it never stopped the event, though, George.
No, it didn't. Some sections were cancelled, but usually because of snowflakes. And not real snowflakes, the real snowflakes. Human ones, yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, that's not quite fair to say, because it was before the term snowflake arrived. It was usually to gain sporting advantage. People would tell lies.
Well,
and play on the fact that the teams had better communications than the event did. And managed to get sections cancelled. Lancia got a great win on Safari because of that. Hey, all strength to them. It's playing the game. That's the nature of the beast.
Absolutely.
We tried the same to keep the section open, but we failed.
Just thinking back to when I started, when I worked at Motoring News and Autosport, more at Motoring News. So through the sort of late 90s, the Safari was obviously always an Easter event. And it was always Circuit of Ireland as well. And I'm sure there was one more event on that one weekend. And that Easter weekend always used to be absolutely mad, just flat out with so much content, so much rallying going on. And it was was a great time of the year. And like you say, to put Safari back now, I think they should, because that was part of the challenge, wasn't it, to go back into that Easter weekend and back.
It was. I mean,
to the challenge of the
weather. It was, and maybe 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 rallies would be wet.
Yeah.
The others, the rest were dry. This year the rains came, I believe, about three weeks ago, yeah, something like that, but the rains came.
It was like, it's like the Belgian Grand Prix, though, isn't it? You know, the weather would always be at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it was wet or dry. And mm, and the good aspect was, even when it is wet, so you get in a 5-day period over the rally weekend, so around Thursday to Sunday to Monday, you would get maybe 1 day of rain, mm, maybe 1.5 days of rain in different areas. So it wasn't necessarily where you were, but the cars would feel it because the rain would eventually be everywhere, and the sections were tough and wet. And
yeah,
and some rivers were flooded. I mean, the rally on occasion stopped because you come to a washaway where a river comes once a year. When that river comes once a year, it's a devastating flood for about 3 or 4 hours.
Yes,
and sometimes the rally had to stop there.
Yeah,
because you don't drive, you drive through a big wide river that's only maybe half a meter deep, but you don't go through a river that's flowing at 20 kph that's only 15 meters wide. Quite clearly, you just drive into it and you're gone. It's self-preservation 101, you'd like to think. Mm. But it does stop the rally occasionally. So maybe from that point of view, it might be harder now.
It might be.
But Easter's a good shout. I mean, when we go in summer, it's actually cold in Kenya. It's not warm. I mean, during the day, it can get up to like a nice summer's day at best. In the evenings, it's cool. You know, you need a jacket on to go outside. Take your jumper, David. You're not going this year.
I am possibly not going this year. It clashes with the Goodwood Festival of Speed, where we have quite a few cars going to the Festival of Speed. So I was going to say the short straw. I'm not sure. I think they're both. Well, Safari is obviously the longer straw. I'm not sure if Lord March or Duke of Richmond is a listener to the podcast. If you are, Mr. Duke of Richmond, apologies for that, but your straw is slightly shorter than the Safari rallies. But I'm sure the Goodwood Festival of Speed will still be a fine event.
I have to say, just to interject, George, by mentioning that, what you've done is you've broken the hopes and dreams of all of Kenyan's rally fans, because I have seen David Evans now around the service park, and I can tell you that the man's actually quite popular for the old autographs and selfies now. He's a big cheese now.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah! Big.
Wow, I had no idea. That's
nor did I, George.
Well, I shall be hopefully wandering around with my Dirtfish t-shirts on, and undoubtedly we'll have other company. Well, Luke will be with me, obviously, won't he? Were you not sending Luke? Have we not decided these things yet?
We are still working on our plan for Safari. Probably things that we shouldn't discuss on air. So moving
on. All right, sorry. Moving on, guys. all things Safari, David, there are new stages. There are, I believe, two or three new stages. I think two new stages and some extended stages. So
and what are your thoughts of those, George? We've not really done a lot about that.
I'm told the two new stages are quite interesting. One of them is very, very quick. So some great opportunities. And it's up on the edge of the Suswa crater round the back of the Hell's Gate electricity station, the thermal electricity station that hisses and buzzes, very aptly named. Quite a noisy place in some places when you're close to where the pipes are. They rattle and bang and make incredible noises, reminding you you're sitting on the edge of a volcano.
Yeah,
always nice. It's always nice. It doesn't feel like it because it doesn't generally smoke. It's not a smoker, Suswa. But you're sitting there on this vast power station, which is a volcano. So there's apparently something that's a fabulously quick stage. The other stage is apparently more like Europe. Lovely, fast flowing stages. You could be in Europe like a lot of Kenya used to be. I mean, Kenya for me, you could be in Thousand Lakes one area, the next you would feel like you were in Portugal, and the next bit you would feel like you were in Wales. It was an amazing place.
Yeah,
when you went up north and around the whole country,
it's just the most fabulous rally. And like you say, it just we've already discussed, as the weather comes in, it changes the nature of the thing entirely. We really wouldn't be expecting rain in the summer, though, would we? Having said that, it did rain last year, didn't it? Spectacularly.
You get the short rains. It was a very small amount of rain, relatively speaking. It was a shower. It was it was about 10 kilometres.
Cost like Rally, though, didn't it?
The rain didn't. His lack of windscreen wipers did, wasn't it? Lack of a heated windscreen, I think, cost him it. That was what it was, not the wiper. It's such a simple thing to go wrong, but there seems to be an awful lot of that has happened with Hyundai. And you'd have to get to the bottom of it, really.
And historically as well, you know, particularly when teams were making components as light as they possibly could to take to some of these events where they weren't really expecting rain, and then heavy rain would come and the wiper motor would fail or something like that. It is quite common, isn't it? But it's not a reliability per se thing. It's actually they've manufactured all of the parts as light as they can for performance. But
it is. I always remember seeing the electricians at Toyota back in the 80s and 90s. They would strip apart all those components, and they would rewire them. They would rewind motors and re-solder them with silver solder, but you know, much higher temperature solder to make sure they wouldn't fail. And I can't ever recall a windscreen wiper motor failing on a Toyota. I mean, nowadays, or was it the Ford Focus? They put the wiper motor down on the floor and then had a carbon rod driving the motor gearbox higher up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Christian Lorio, you know, getting the weight down. But again, I think that was a very simple mod, and it would be very cleverly done. But as all of those things, when you're modifying for lightness, you are introducing an element of risk. Although finely calculated and usually spot on, vastly open to criticism when it fails, of course, because the failure is inevitably worth cost a lot more than the material gained for that single component. But forget the single component, because the car is an organism, and you do 50 of those changes and you do get a perceptible performance gain from that type of thing. But one failure, it gives no material benefit, but as part of the organism it has done. But if it fails, of course, it's devastating. So that's the tightrope upon which rally car and motorsport engineers walk. It's a horrendous thing.
It is, but ultimately it can be a fabulous thing as well that delivers plenty of success. But just moving on into next week, we've talked a lot about Safari. We will get to Kenya later in the year. But next week is all about one place. George, you and I talked about it quite a lot last week. It's Portugal. And very, very exciting. Looking at the entry list, which I did last week, pretty strong, Luke.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. I kind of got caught out there. I didn't know what to say to you.
Sorry.
I can continue rambling on a bit, but 100 cars, we talked about that off air. I've not checked the statistics, but I'm fairly confident we haven't had as many cars this year on an entry. It's the most Rally 1 cars we've had at 12. I'll tell you what, I'll use the wonderful EWRC right now, and I'll tell you how many Rally 2 cars it is as well. 52. Wow. Okay. So,
well,
yeah.
That is fantastic, isn't it? That's 52 cars, all capable of a top 10. Well, certainly you'd say two or three of them are going to be capable of a top 10 finish by normal standards these days. Might be a little bit harder to get the top 10 with 12 Rally 1 cars, but the attrition rate there will be significant. I am fascinated by WRC2 because that is the class that, you know, Luke, you and I would be going and doing an event in one of those cars when you co-drive for me. even though you've not co-driven for anyone yet, as I've totally discovered,
you've upped the ante there, George.
The car, and the point is that's a car that's capable of a top 10 result. That's a car that allows a driver to grow, to breathe, to start to show themselves, to start to get the self-belief that they can take a car to that ragged edge. And that ragged edge is perilously close to the WRC one pace. So yeah, it's 52 cars is a fantastic entry. And I would love to think that we might see a couple of jokers in there getting some great results. Some guys poking their nose at the top five or eight cars that normally wouldn't be there. Some local crews, some other international crews coming out for their first go at it. Let's see how good their diligence is for pace notes and the hard work, looking at the videos, et cetera, et cetera.
I've just done a bit of counting up. So I didn't actually reach out to EWRC, which I thought should have done. But I've counted 41 WRC2 entries.
Yeah.
I can't remember an entry like that. That's ginormous. But interestingly, there is a huge amount of interest in WRC2. All the way down. Obviously, Andreas Mikkelsen missed the last round in Croatia, but he's still leading the championship after winning the class in Monte in Sweden. And then we've got Teemu Suninen coming for his first outing of the season. But then Gryazin, on the official entry list I've got here, Gryazin is the third car listed, but he is not listed for points. He's a P2 driver, but he's not listed for points in WRC2. So maybe he's not nominating that event. But the other one to talk about for me is, firstly, I want a bit of opinion from you both on how will Teemu Suninen come back and how will Oliver Solberg get on stepping back from obviously the Rally 1 car to the Rally 2 car, because we've got Danny Sordo taking his seat in the factory team.
It's interesting.
Over to you, boys. I'm going to have some coffee now.
That was tactical. It is interesting, to be fair. And it is worth pointing out that this is the first rally that Hyundai have done in WRC2 this year. So the fact we've got Oliver Solberg in the car is a bit of a one-off, shall we say. It may well happen in future events because we know him and Sordo are sharing a Rally 1 car. So it might be that on the events that Oliver isn't in Rally 1, they try and find the budget to get him into the Rally 2 car just to learn and get the experience. But as David said, Teemu Suninen, he's not done a rally since, he won't have done one since Monza at all in any championship. So it's a long time to be not behind the wheel. But it is a big year for him. And it's quite strange in a way because I know last year he had his fair few issues. But if you wind the clock back 12 months, yes, he was doing a little bit of yo-yoing between cars, but theoretically he was actually in a better position last year, yet now it feels like he's in a much better place. He seems less burdened, he seems more chilled. I don't know what he knows about his future that we maybe don't. At the minute, we understand he's only got rallies in a Rally 2 car. Will he get more than that? I honestly don't know, but you'd have to potentially speculate at events like Finland. If he can find some budget, might he be there? I don't want to start too many vicious rumours, but it's a very competitive place to be anyway. And I think that's the interesting thing now is I don't think you have to win WRC2 anymore to be impressive because there's that many good drivers in there. You look at, as George said, you look at the entry list and it's not just the big names that we might know from other WRC rallies. There's so many drivers in there. And even things as daft as Martin Prokop. I know he's maybe not as quick as he once was, but the seeding for WRC2 starts at 20, and there are a couple of gaps in there because you've got drivers like Elvin Evans, say, that's number 33 and stuff, so he takes that number. But Prokop's down at 49 on the entry for WRC2.
That's mad, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But I have gone off on a tangent there, David. To answer your question about Teemu, I think actually very well. Provided the car is as competitive as they would like, I think Suninen is a good shout for at least a podium. Oliver's more interesting because I think he's got a bit of his main objective, of course, is to learn the rally. And he has been here before, but the extra stage miles are never a bad thing. But you just never know. Is he going to be tempted to try and prove a point? He's a young rally driver, so quite probably yes. But if I was him, I think it would be very tempting to get drawn into battle. But I think a smart thing to do is be quick, but not in the limelight. I think if you can do that, get a top five, do nothing silly. Just get the mileage and set some good times, but not do anything crazy. I think that's the best kind of result he can achieve in Portugal.
But in some ways, he comes in with a real target on his back, doesn't he? Because, you know, he's the one, he's the chosen one. He's the guy that Hyundai have gone with for this year. And everybody, that particularly the likes of Mikkelsen, you know, they won't just want to beat him. They'll want to absolutely sort of massacre him because they want to show that Hyundai got it wrong. They should have given a seat to him. They should have given a seat to me. You know, Temu's the same. I'm sure, you know, you always look to your teammate as the first person to beat, and Temu will be desperate to put some time on Oliver Solberg. Oliver is, you know, he's the same kind of youngster as Calais in that he's matured very quickly. And Oliver just needs to realize and remember that he's only here for the experience. You know, the rest of the likes of Temu and Mikkelsen and stuff, they're still pursuing what he's got. He's got a Rally One seat. Okay, it's a part-time seat, but he's still got one. And he just needs to know and to remember that, like you say, Luke, he is there for experience. He doesn't need to get drawn into a fight. He needs to keep his nose clean, make some good notes, drive the roads, and come out at the other end and, you know, build his speed for the next time he's in a Rally One car. It is going to be a difficult one, because to tell a driver that is very easy. But actually, in the heat of a battle, it is difficult not to get drawn in. And, you know, equally, there will be an element that Oliver will want to demonstrate that he has got the speed, which, of course, we know he has. So if, for me, this is going to be one of the most interesting WRC2 rounds in a long time. And you're absolutely right. You look down at the quality all the way down the entry list, the likes of Stefan Lefebvre, Eric Kamerle, you know, just great names. Chris Ingram's in there, of course. It just keeps on coming. Benito Guerra, our friend from Mexico, yeah. All the way through. It's tremendous. But it is, for me, it's almost a point now that Mikkelsen can actually start to manage the championship. You know, he's got those two wins. I think he scored 6 from 7. So, you know, he's already on the road to a solid championship challenge.
Sorry to come across, and again, I'm sorry to keep George quiet again, but just quickly on Mikkelsen while you mentioned him. I have actually been quite, and it sounds weird because it's almost hard to be impressed by what Mikkelsen's doing now, because he kind of can't really do anything more than he has done. He won ERC and WRC2 last year. He's won both WRC2 events this year. So he's kind of constantly breaking into a ceiling that he's hoping one day will budge. But I actually think his approach this year has been fantastic. We all remember his famous quotes last year when he said he wanted to dominate every rally. And I think he's now been quick to admit that actually he underestimated just how difficult that would be. But this year he's taken the approach of just be quick. But on neither of the two events he's done, he's not been the fastest. He could have been if he wanted to be, but he's deliberately kept himself in check and had a margin. And I think that's quite impressive that he's been able to do that and come out on top. But this, as we've alluded to already, this will be his hardest to win if he's going to do it again. If he's going to go for the three, he's got a lot of hungry drivers. And we've not mentioned Johan Rossell either, who won Croatia very impressively. As I say, I'm just looking, my eyes are bobbing around into so many drivers you could pick out that could be there. It is brilliant.
And Portugal, George, it's not, as we discussed last week, it's not an easy rally to go to, is it?
It's not. It is particularly tough. Excuse me a second. Sorry, guys, I've got a cat in the room. Apologies.
Does the cat have anything to say?
Yes, he did actually have quite a lot to say. So
what's the cat's name, George?
Bo.
No, yeah. Let's go with Swedish Bo,
name.
Not Bo.
Swedish name, Bo.
As not,
yeah, Bo,
body
as
odor.
In the Swedish, Busa.
Okay, right, good.
Yeah, okay. Lovely wee thing he is. Anyhow, no, I mean, honestly speaking, you know, just to go back to Andreas Mikkelsen, you know, he was the best rally driver on those first two events. It's all about survival and reading the road. You know, it's your horrible English cricket analogy, David. Probably it rung true. I understood what you were getting at. The guy just read the room. You know, he figured out what was needed, and he did it two events in a row. And I wouldn't be surprised for him to come back here and do it a third time in a row for him. But yeah, I mean, snapping at their heels, Oliver Solberg. Well, I mean, you know, he's for all the other drivers, what an incredible marker. Oliver Solberg, very close to the pace on WRC, very, very close, at times right on it, but overall, incredibly close. What a fantastic marker for all those other drivers.
For
all
totally.
Those other drivers, you know. You know, if Johan Russell's sadly a second a kilometre, behind Oliver Solberg. You know, he's got to go away and find more, find extra. Chris Ingram, same story. You know, these guys all want to come up. Eric Camelli, you know, the names are many. Timo absolutely has to deliver and has to be the mark. I hope his luck's good. I hope he makes his luck good. You make your own luck in rally to a great extent. Start off steady, pull away. You know, just look at what Andreas Mikkelsen's done. Smartest guy in the room, basically, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, you
that seems odd to say that in many ways, but he is the smartest guy in the room this year.
But you know, when you're facing a WRC 2 fight and everything, it is intense. It is difficult, but let's not forget that Mikkelsen's somebody who has shared a team with Sebastian Ogier, you know, and the last
absolutely.
The last event they did together in Australia 2016, Andreas beat him across the final day. So
yeah.
Mikkelsen is a world championship, a world rally winning driver. He's a world championship quality pilot. You know, he can absolutely deal with all of this. And I think, Luke, mm-hmm. you're right. His mindset has flipped a little bit now, because this time last year, he was very much in the mindset of, yes, I'm in a Skoda, but I'm ready to jump into an M Sport car. I'm ready to be back in a world rally car very soon. He still wants that, desperately wants that this year. But he's also very understanding that he's got a job to do with Skoda. They're doing a huge amount of work on the development of the new Rally 2 car, which comes out in August. We know that him and Chris Meek are doing a significant amount of testing. And I just think that Mikkelsen's head is in a slightly different place this year, that he knows he's got the speed, he knows he's got everything he needs. You know, he is a professional driver. He's been well paid by Skoda, and he's doing a job for them. Still, very aware that he needs to be the sort of best of the rest, which he absolutely is, to get into a Rally 1 car if there's one available next year. So no, I think he will be hard to beat in Portugal, but he doesn't necessarily need to win. But there are a whole bunch of other guys out there that do need to win. Yeah. And it, you know, the excitement doesn't stop at WRC2, because of course it is the third round of juniors this year. Juniors are coming thick and fast. With obviously we've got John Armstrong and Larry Una winning, but both have won one of the first two rounds. So they are. Let me just check.
I'm sure they're joint points. Yeah, joint championship leaders. Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. So I mean, that in itself is just providing another fabulous storyline. Going into Portugal. But George did reference there briefly my cricket analogy, which actually I can't take any credit for. And Matty, if you're listening still, Matty, our friend who isn't keen on talking, excuse me, other things apart from rallying, this is related to rallying. So stand by, Matty. It'll all become clear in a moment. We had a colleague I've referenced on numerous occasions, David Williams, the greatest rally journalist in the history of time. And he always talked about good rally drivers like Mikkelsen, who take their time, build their experience, becoming quite like a good spin bowler. In that with spin bowling, it's different to pace bowling. You don't just chuck the ball as quickly as you can. You have to place the ball and spin the ball, obviously. And so much of that is related to the weather conditions, the humidity in the air, the state of the pitch, the state of the wicket, and it all evolved. You know, you could go to the Wacker in Perth one year and it would play differently, but over 10 years, 15 years, spin bowlers would just get better and better and better with the experience. So David Williams's feeling was that rally drivers were very similar. You know, as you built your experience, you would get better and better. We saw champions into their 30s. Marcus Grönholm, Jimmy McRae, you know, starting much later and coming with that experience. And now, of course, everything has been turned on its head. And the reason for this conversation is the conversation that I had with Jari Matti in Croatia, where we were just chatting away about what Cali was doing. And Jari Matti said, you know, actually, I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't put in the level of commitment and time to the videos that that the youngsters are doing these days. You know, Jari Matti was very much a sort of visual learner. He needed to get out on the stages, drive the roads, an old school rally driver, I guess. And it's true. You look at the way that things are. We've talked about this for years, and you know, this was one of the things that Sébastien Ogier really, really doesn't like about the availability of All Live. In it is a fantastic, just the most incredible service. But from every stage that Kelly Rovanpera has driven this year, you and I can go back and watch every single corner. And that, Ogier always felt that he was giving away his secrets. And it has, and it is changing the way that drivers progress and find it and get their experience. And the sport will never, ever go back now, will it?
Well, it might do if somebody takes the cameras out of the car, but that would be our loss, wouldn't it?
We don't want that. No, it's not going to happen. You know, the way that a driver builds their experience, it has changed dramatically. And it's not necessarily a bad thing because it is opening the sport up to far, far more people.
I'm not sure I buy into it 100% in that way. And I know that, I mean, Sébastien was one of the hardest working guys with regard to that. I mean, his level of diligence, I don't think you ever saw him out for dinner in the evening. Mm. Both him and Julian just basically worked the whole time. They went to all these countries and they saw the inside of their recce car and the inside of their hotel room, probably just room servicing every night. Whilst they went through all their, I mean, the hours and hours and hours every night going over the videos, refining the notes.
But
I think that becomes very personal, and I'm not sure when you're looking at someone else's videos that you're actually giving away the crown jewels. I would argue that he's wrong. It's there for anybody to take. You're extrapolating what you can put from your notes, from the visual of the road, and I don't see that by looking at you. And I understand Sébastien's viewpoint that he would think that people can see how he's driving, therefore they can copy it. It's not like that. It's much more visceral than that. It's much more hardcore, real. Your ability and your perceptions linking into your motor functions, linking into what you see in your own visual flow field on the day, fed in by the pace notes into your mind, into your mind's picture that overlays over the road. That's all giving you your speed. I think it's far too tenuous a thing to think that you could just watch a video and get something very, very special out of it. Undoubtedly, it all adds to the mix, but I don't think you're giving away the crown jewels.
But to a certain extent, George, apparently these drivers are watching these videos, so they almost don't need the notes. They're learning them off by heart.
Lots of drivers learn the roads. I mean, I used to be able to drive a road and pretty well on one pass could go incredibly quickly. I remember doing a Scottish rally and I'd missed the pace notes for a number of the stages because I'd had to go and do a PR day. So my co-driver had gone and made the notes and with someone else, and they were radically different. And I remember coming to some stages that, you know, I'd maybe driven them five or six times over the course of 10 years, maybe that. And going into Davila with my Group N car, I think I came out second quickest. I think I was just behind Didi Auriol, who was fastest in a Sierra. And I was in the Group N Sierra, and Davila was a little stage just on the higher up the River Forth than Edinburgh. And maybe it was about 8 or 9 miles. And I was second quickest in there by maybe just 1 or 2 seconds from Didi because it was high, high speed. And I remembered the road.
You've got to stop there, George. So, I mean, George, stop. Just Luke, you and I do not deserve to share this podcast with George, do we? It's just come back to me once again to realise that what are we doing here talking to this man?
We're imposters.
I mean, these were imposters. These were just flashes of brilliance or luck or, you know, some skill, of course. I had skill.
No, but brilliance.
You know, that was a Group N car against a Group A car, but what I had was a vastly higher top speed. You know, it's a bit like the Puma, the Ford Puma now is, you know, it's got a slightly limited top speed compared to the other teams, hasn't it? It's about 8 or 9 kph slower, we saw in Monte Carlo. My Group N car was 40 kph faster than a Group A car. after a certain period of time. Once you were up to high speed, my car would keep going. It took longer to get up there, but once it got up there, I could keep going. That car could top out at well over 200 kph on the gravel.
I get all of that, George. I totally get all of that. But still, you've actually got to drive it. And that's the remarkable thing. You've got to point it between the trees.
To bring my point back, is you learn the road. You don't need the pace notes. But the pace notes are going to give you the cuts. They're going to give you the detail. But the point being is, I think, you know, your own video that you take from the car with the voiceover, and then you listen back and you watch back and you read the notes and you refine them based on the cut. You know, there's nothing to stop you. Maybe there is actually in the regulations. I would tend to have a camera outside the car and inside the car. I'd want two-channel recording. I'd damn near have a camera on either side of the car. When I'm reviewing my video, I'd like to be like one of these gamers. I'd like to have the middle shot straight out the windscreen, and I would like to have side shots looking down at the sides of the road. That would be a massive game because you could actually see the extra. We're cutting there. Hang on. Yeah, we're cutting there. Look, there's a milestone marker just on the inside of the guy. We just missed it. Nobody's seen it. Okay, let's not go deeper in there, because the tendency always is on the rally to go deeper. So you'll pick up a lot of extra information. I don't think they're necessarily picking it up from other drivers. It's themselves. I think what you do yourself is down to you. Because the limit is so, so edgy, I don't think you're going to pick that up from the video. I think Sebastian Ogier's fears about his skills being copied, identified, not happening. Yes, your comment, David, about the drivers learning the roads and not needing pace notes. Yes, more or less. Yeah, they will learn the road. Some people can go over a road once and basically know it. One driver in Finland famously never used pace notes, and he won the rally, Kjosti Hämäläinen.
Only once, but
he was always quick. But he just learned the roads. But that was in the days when, you know, he would spend 6 months driving over the road every evening of his life.
Single
corner.
And we can refer that one back to some of the greats on Mull, can't we? You know, these people, Andy Absolutely. Knight, would come out and never use pace notes because they knew the road. But I'm sorry, George, I'm not going to let this one pass.
No.
This was 88. I'm now looking on EWRC.
Yeah, EWRC.
The second best website in the world. So you retired from the Scottish in 88 with a transmission problem. You remember what that
broken prop shaft.
Was
oddly
it?
Enough.
Yeah, that's pretty terminal in a rear-wheel drive car.
It certainly is. Yeah, you just stopped in in the Trossachs stages, sadly.
That was a good year for you, though. You had a lot of rallies that year. Did you do the full British Championship?
We did the National Championship, and we did two rounds of the British Championship. Actually three rounds, because I think...
Yeah, Scottish, Welsh.
We did the Manx National. We didn't do the Manx International. Manx National. Stopped on the first stage, head gasket failure on Manx, which was a shame. It was foggy and I wasn't comfortable at all. But we had some friends there doing a split time halfway through the first stage, and apparently we were right there on the pace, which was nice. Good car for it. So
big one, your big result in 88, and it's all just come back to me now. Obviously on the what it was called then, the KL Graphics, which was the Swansea round of the National Championship.
Yeah. You could call it a Rally of Great Britain in the modern sense, because it was those South Wales incredibly fast South Wales
Resolver
stages, beautiful,
and all of those. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Blind rally. I didn't know the stages very well. I'd only ever done them once.
Which a lot of them were. The Welsh that year was blind, wasn't it? Scottish, you definitely had notes.
Scottish we had notes for, but we got scuppered by a press event, sadly. So
But no, you won KL Graphics by 6 seconds from Murray Grayson in a local cadet 400.
Yeah, quite a troubled day as well. We slipped off the road on the first stage. We threw away about 20 odd seconds on the first stage, just straight on that junction. Not quite a hairpin. I had to reverse out. I think I was very upset because the picture on Motoring News or Autosport from that event just had us reversing out of a ditch. Thanks a lot. You know, thanks a bunch for that one.
And we should just look a little bit further down the final results. In 19th place in a Peugeot 309 GTI is a certain Colin McRae.
Yeah.
I was so cool, George. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're an absolute legend. You really are. There was something else I was going to ask you about 88.
All right, 88.
But I can't remember what it was. But I think actually we need to.
It was the end of my driving career, sadly. So
well, it was, yeah, because there's not a lot after 88.
I stopped cold turkey. That was it. You know, I'd had that chance and couldn't manage to keep it going. You know, what's the point of continuing? I mean, it's a sport I love. I still had the opportunity to work in the sport.
Yeah.
I was already working for Toyota for 3 years at that point. So I thought, okay, here. I mean, well, the odd thing was I worked for Toyota factory rally team. And I had a support package from the Ford factory rally team. Go figure.
Your last event was the Audi Sport Rally, which was obviously a Mid Wales event,
yes,
which would have used Dovey and all of those incredible forests.
Yep.
And you finished ninth overall with the fabulous Andrew Kellett alongside you.
Absolutely.
Why? How come Jerry Williams beat you? He finished seventh. Alongside Louise Aitken Walker, Jerry Williams, our friend, the Daily Mail scribe, and again one of the best rally journalists.
We'd had a fairly difficult year that year, like any rally. So we started off at the Sunseeker down in the south of England, and it was a mud bath. It was a safari, and we were about car 27th on the road. And if anybody listened to last week's podcast on describing the mud in Portugal rally. The forerunner to that was that Sunseeker rally down on the south coast. We, at times, we were in first gear just trying to keep the car moving, and it was almost stopped at times. Did make some top times on that rally when the going was good, but we really struggled against the four-wheel drive cars, and we finished fairly lowly, you know, down in the teens somewhere. It wasn't a great result. We rolled on the Granite City rally whilst. Again, first stage, but again, threw in a whole load of, I think we were fastest times on that rally to claw our way back into the mid-teens and got some points again. We retired in Wales, We retired in the Manx. Mm-hmm. We were heading for almost an event win on the Skip Brown when the rear shock absorbers failed on a first stage of a two-stage complex. Had to nurture the car through there. I think we still won the class. That was the first of our comebacks, but we should have won the event. I think we finished in the top 10 somewhere. Can't quite remember where. Followed up with the midsummer break, and then coming back to the KL Graphics, which we won, and we started to dominate. We started to dominate the Group N category, but we had to literally win the category on every event for the rest of the year to do it. Yeah. So we went into that Peter Russick Manuals Rally or whatever it was called at that time.
The Cumbria in Mid Wales. Oh, that one.
No, the Cumbria in Kielder. We finished third overall. And one Group N by a mile in there, because again it's high speed. So if you're not scared and you can go quick, you'll go well. But that last rally of the event we had to win. And remember, you were in the fabulous Ian Hughes's backyard.
Yeah.
Gwyndaf Evans, who we'd absolutely drubbed in those stages. I say drubbed. We'd taken him to the cleaners with same cars, similar cars anyway. On REC the year before in 87, and something that he smarted from immensely. Anyway, we're going into that event. He was doing it as a warm up for Rally GB, and we were doing it to win the championship. So I was under strict instructions not to get into a fight with Gwyndaf, and every part of my body said fight with him and just go for it. All the offers I had for the next year were tied to me being Group N national champion, which I managed to do. We have a very, very quiet, careful event. We didn't shine out at any particular point. There was a lot of factory rally cars there. So then if it had just been a national event, I think we would have been still maybe third or overall, something like that. I can't remember what Louise was driving.
She was in 205.
205. The 2 liter 205. Yeah. So that gives you an idea of how careful we were being. We were. I mean, she was. That was again a fast rally, and Louise was incredibly fast. So. And
just in front of you, I mean, some amazing cars. You know, Ian Roberton in a Nissan 240 RS, and in sixth place, this is one for some of the older boys, Dominic Frattaroli in a Darien F9. But up front, Russell Brooks won, Stig Blomqvist second, Malcolm Wilson third, back in the days when he was driving a Vauxhall Astra GTE, Phil Collins fourth, Gwynedd fifth, Frattaroli, Aitken Walker, Roberton, George Donaldson ninth. That's...
We got the win in the class in Group N, and we had to have that. And Ian Hughes, I can't remember what happened to Ian, but he was our big challenger. So if he'd beaten us, he would have won.
He is not on the. He is indeed on Mazda. He did. He finished
Mazda
32nd.
Yeah,
Mazda 3. Right, so he must have had a problem. Yeah, 11 minutes down. He must have problems. But well. Having wondered at the top of the show what we were going to talk about, we have filled 45 minutes in a fine fashion. So thank you very, very much for that, George. I think we do need to set some time aside and actually do your career properly, because clearly there are some great stories to come from there.
It's only just starting my career.
Well, absolutely.
I'm waiting for it to kick in, really.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Or
kick out, maybe. Who knows?
More likely the latter, let's be honest.
Indeed.
Just been an absolute joy, as ever. And we can look forward to previewing Portugal properly next week, hopefully with the returning voice of Rally, who is somewhere between here and Melbourne, hopefully nearer to here than Melbourne right now. And obviously over to you, Lise, for Lise O'Sullivan, our editor, who will put together a fine show for you from what we've talked about today. And we will speak to you all again next week. Thank you very much, chaps.
Preview for Portugal. That is very exciting. I am so excited by Portugal. We said it last week. I think we even said it the week before. What an event it is going to be. The build-up to it has been amazing. Just the wait has been interminable.
Yeah.
Oh, bring it on. And such a fabulous event. Anybody going, make sure you eat lots of pasta del nadas. Lovely little custard tarts. Delicious coffees. You've got to stop for coffee everywhere you possibly can. It's a great place.
Yeah. First bit of gravel of the season. We can't wait. Oh. Luke, thank you very much for your company.
Thank you very much. I've just enjoyed listening to a bit of a George Donaldson fan club reunion. David was like a puppy dog guy. I do agree with we need to create a separate podcast series. Do every single, because George's memory is almost as impressive as his driving. So if we can have an episode in every single rally he did, I bet you we could fill half an hour with what he can tell you. That's all I'll say. It's very impressive, George.
Definitely. No, it is. Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of the stories I can tell, I can't tell, except over a very, very fine meal purchased for me by the listener.
George is available for those meals.
Absolutely.
Good. Right. We'll leave everybody in peace, and we will talk again next week.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Speak soon.
And in the meantime, I've just got a message here to say don't forget, which I'm pretty useless and had actually forgotten. If you're short on rally news through the coming week, don't forget to have a look at dirtfish.com and follow us on all of our socials, Dirtfish Rally, and you'll find out lots and lots of stuff. And we will see you all next week. And this really is the end now. Gotta go. Adios. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.